Hi everyone, and welcome back on the couch. In today's episode, my 18-year-old son agreed to an interview with me. I know, right? I just about fell out of my chair when he texted me back in the affirmative. The initial interview, so the full-length interview, was recorded in French for this podcast, but it really was so special that I asked him to stay, to flip things over to the English side, and recap some of the juicier bits. Also, I just wanted to keep talking to him just a little bit longer. The result, in my opinion, is very interesting. See, I wanted to get the perspective of a young adult trying to navigate and find his way through this life of ours as best he can, just like the rest of us. These uncertain times are, of course, also affecting them, and I think that it is vital that we offer them the space to voice what's on their minds, what's in their hearts, and try to learn how to best support them in their journey. This one is coming directly from my heart to, well, hopefully, yours. We need to listen to our kids. Their voice matters now more than ever. And now, without further ado, here is the first part of a two-part series. I present to you Sean. Hi, Sean.
Hey.
Hi, and welcome on the couch.
Thank you.
Okay, so now, a few questions for you in English. Would you consider yourself to be a happy person or not?
I wouldn't call myself a happy person, but I do think that I have happy episodes and lower episodes, I guess.
Okay. So is there more of the happy, or is happy too grand of a statement?
Yeah, I think happy is somewhere a bit grand of a statement, but I understand what you mean. But I have issues with it, but it's not like I can't experience it at all either. So I wouldn't say that I'm unhappy, but I wouldn't say that I'm happy either. So I'd say there's a, not even a perfect balance, but there's a balance.
There's a balance. Okay. Do you think you're happier now? So now you're 18. Do you think you're happier now than, let's say, 4 or 5 years ago?
It's hard to say, but I'd go for yes, but I still wouldn't be able to pinpoint if I was either happy or unhappy back then too. So it's a bit gray, and I don't know. It's hard to generalize, I guess. But I would say that I feel like that. The happiness is more like it's more tangible now than it was 4 or 5 years back.
Okay. And are there things that you gravitate towards in order to make yourself happy? Like, do you, because you're starting to know yourself, of course, you're 18. Yeah. So are there a few things that you know are your go-tos and they really help you get to that state that, of course, we're all craving and yearning for?
I'd say of course music, but that's a bit of an easy answer, I guess, but it's still there, you know. If I'm having a lot of anxiety, it always makes it easier, but it's not like a perfect coping mechanism, I guess, but it still helps get me there. I wouldn't say that I do have a like perfect method to just feel happier right now, you know.
Okay.
But okay. I would like music mostly, but like distractions in general are good, you know. So I'd say seeing friends, seeing people, just anything. I could go for a walk either. Like, it probably would help. It's not a thing that I do to help myself.
Yeah.
I don't know if it could help. I've never done it when it's necessary, I guess.
Okay.
So there's a lot of things that I know would help. I just never do them in the moment where it's like it could change everything, because at that moment I'm obviously not trying to go outside or
you're not
walk
in
or
good
anything.
Place to, yeah. Okay.
So like when I walk and I'm already happy, it makes me happier, I guess.
Yeah.
Or like blissful, if there's a difference. But then
I think
there's a perfect coping mechanism or like a actual thing that makes me happier.
You mentioned your friends. Probably
yeah.
know that answer, but how important were they in those years in high school? Because the main reason right now that we're talking in French and in English, and I really wanted to make sure that this was inclusive, especially, well, I'm really proud of my son and I want everybody to hear, was because this is dedicated to young people that are perhaps struggling right now with anxiety, depression. We spoke about it in French. If you understand French, I would recommend that you try it out, because you have a lot of great insights about it. So I'm trying to reach the young people that are suffering, that might think not only are probably suffering alone, not knowing how to ask for help, not getting the help that they need, especially these past years, which have been insane for everybody, but of course for anybody that hasn't, you know, formed their full-on personality yet and are already in this weird transitional period between parents and friends and so forth. So during that time, you're 18, you're just out of it, fresh out of it. How important were your friends, whom I all love?
Yeah,
that is amazing. I love them all. I've loved them from the beginning. They're always welcome in our house. They're that friends, you know? So how important were they in your life?
I mean, I've only met them at the beginning of my high school, so it's a relatively a fresh relationship, I would say, because I've had friends for longer.
Yeah.
But these three friends, they made, like, I wouldn't say, like, it's, like, 100% they helped me through it, because it just wouldn't mean anything, I guess, but they did help me get through a lot, because either I was like unintentionally bringing them with me, I guess, because it just like you keep on talking about stuff and it just like inflicts on people, I guess. So we kind of all did that to each other growing up, so it was it made it easier, but it also made it worse, I guess, because you just get comfortable at some point. Because just for example, like when I got I don't know what it would be in English, maybe 10th grade, one of my best friends, we were both in the same class, but we were the only people that knew each other. So, but not the only people, but he was the only person I knew in those classes. So, which obviously made us stay more together,
closer,
longer, every day. So it just got to the point that our depression just got merged at some point, or like our anxieties just like were matched at every levels. So we just became like very similar people just through that. So it made us, like, the destructive tendencies that you get from depression and anxiety, it just got worse because we were amplifying it together, because we were just like juggling it through one another.
Back and forth, okay.
Yeah, so for example, I had something on my mind and I had to talk about it. He was the only one there. So he was the only one that listens. And that thing that I said to him, We weren't the type to just like listen for listening. Like we don't think that helps a lot. We thought so when we like to talk to each other for like serious conversations, I guess we just ramble on and on, go back and forth. There's never like a this person's talking, explaining what he's going through. The other person just sits there and says, I understand. It's never been that. We've never had that type of conversation style, I guess. And it's not what we needed, I guess, but it sure would have helped a little bit, because we just, when I said something I talk about a serious topic that I had on my mind, and yeah, he responded, it was always with something that he had on his mind that was worrying him.
Okay.
So we were just never happy because we were always talking about depressing stuff. So it got to a point that we saw each other 5 days a week at school from morning to 4 p.m. From the minute we wake up almost, yeah, to 4 p.m. Then we got to see each other after school. So we went skating or whatever. And we just talked about those same topics more and more for longer. So yeah, it just got to the point that we know what the other person is going to say in the exact phrase type that he's going to use, because yeah, we have like the same speech patterns.
Okay.
And it just got to the point that I know what he's going to say and he knows what I'm going to answer. So it just gets to nowhere. So we just stopped. So at one point we were just, if we talked about something that was, I guess, depressing, it was more of a, it's urgent type of way. Like it's a, it, this thing happened, is happening right now type, okay, of thing. And I need like
help,
something.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
It's not even like, I don't need you. we're clear about that. We don't need each other. We need something, and we're there all the time. So it's a coping mechanism. So it's just at the same time that we helped each other to uplift ourselves when the other person was okay, we just brought ourselves lower every time that the other person wasn't.
But was it always like that? Like, I'm listening to you and it makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah. And at the same time, didn't part of the experience of exchanging with him, and I know exactly what you're talking about, again, great friend, yeah, wasn't there some kind of comfort in knowing, first off, you're not alone, somebody else exactly, sure, your age is going through it and understands, and just getting it off your chest kind of makes everything a little bit lighter and is a coping mechanism, whether it's healthy or not, kind of in,
yeah,
in the throes of, yeah, it, yeah, right? At least there's some sort of, I mean, you're evacuating something that you're going through instead of keeping it inside. Right. So isn't there at least some comfort in that also?
A little, but it just got so like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like, when I felt something, like some bad emotion, it could be guilt, it could be whatever. Yeah. When this happened to me, if I talked about it, it brought me back to that specific emotion.
Yeah.
So if I didn't talk about it, I was good for the time being, and I was good by the time that I forgot about it or I got to the next,
okay,
thing. So it was just easier to wait it out than to bring myself in it, like, again, to just get that little weight off my shoulders that I'm going to carry with something else. Either way, it's a pessimistic way of seeing it, but it's like the weight is still there. It's just another thing that's weighing you down. So it just got easier to wait it out and to just be there physically with the other person to distract yourself from it. We became like coping things for each other, not people. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. Like
so it just, the presence of the other was making us all right. It wasn't making us good, but it was making us all right. So we didn't have to go back to bad to feel a little bit all right then, because we were already all
in
right,
an okay state. Okay, so now, of course, the entire interview, I've been thinking of parents and educators hearing you, and it could worry us, right? So I want to see, do you think this is kind of basically the experience of most kids? That, I mean, the way you're talking about it, it's really heavy, yeah, Sean. Like, it's really, I'm carrying this load. My friend is carrying the exact same load. And I think I'm not lying when I'm saying that both of you had good lives. I mean, it wasn't, yeah. You know, you, yeah. I'm not saying you were never traumatized. Of course, again, you did speak about it very eloquently in French on Solid 20, but I mean, it's not like you had this horrible life of not having parents, yeah. of being, no. you know, I don't know, in the streets, obviously, or not having enough to eat, or, you know, those really,
sure.
so,
yeah, yeah.
And most of the kids, anyways, that I met, your friends that I met, I think it's pretty much, you know, average, both parents usually, if not pretty okay relationship, yeah. Everybody's eating, everybody has, you know, their basic yeah. needs met and so forth, and their love, which is
sure.
priority number one. Do you think most of you, most of your friends, most of your peers had such a heavy experience in high school? Or even, you're not even talking high school, you're talking 10th yeah. grade here.
Yeah, but it's not, I wouldn't say at the beginning, because it had already started before high school.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like new for me, like when high school came in, but I'd say when I saw that it was like a mutual thing for like most of the people that surrounded me is mostly when I got to, when I changed programs, when I stopped the international yeah. program, and I got to see like actual people that didn't want to be there, I guess, like people that didn't to school for like a bigger purpose,
yeah.
like just being there because there's nothing else and you have to.
Yeah.
And that made me realize that, okay, this feeling that I have towards school and like towards a social life, I guess, and all these anxiety
inducing yeah.
things. Yeah, yeah. It just made me realize that most of the people have been feeling like this and have just been hiding it or are still feeling like this. Mm. And it's not like it's new, I guess. It's a new thing for them, and they're even more incapacitated than I am, me, because I've experienced it for longer, I guess.
Okay, so it's common, basically. What you're saying is...
Yeah, it's very common. It's not through the same stuff. Like, I wouldn't say that everybody has anxiety, but an absence of purpose,
yeah.
definitely.
Hmm.
Definitely, because I've talked to, like, when I got in the normal program, I just got to talk to so many more different types of people, because when I was in the international, it was mostly like suburban white kids, not to be like, you know, but it was mostly
what it
that
was, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like people that if they didn't have a purpose, their parents inflicted one upon
okay.
them, like you have to get those grades, you have to like get into that school and stuff, so they didn't have a choice, I guess. Or it was you know, something similar, like they enjoyed school or something. So this, I'm not saying that
it's possible,
not happening.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah. That
not
you
your
just
case.
See the positive things of your
yeah.
day, I guess, like you like hanging out with your friends or whatever. So it really got to like 10th and 11th grade when I saw like, all right, that's a mutual thing for everybody I see when I open my eyes in high school. So it was not just the suburban kids, not just the ghetto kids, I guess. It was everybody. So everybody felt the need to cope. So that in a high school is not a good feeling, I guess. So it just makes everything worse for everybody, because nobody wants to be here, and the teachers know nobody
yeah.
wants to be there. So it makes them not want to be there. So it makes, it's just a depressing
and
place.
Because
general.
You did eventually, we'll talk about that, but didn't you feel, and it's okay for you to answer this, didn't you feel like you could come to us feeling this heaviness
sure.
and at such a young age?
Sure.
And even in French, you mentioned that was way before 10th grade. That's why I said that before. So it was, you know, yeah. or you know, me or your dad or both of us. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like I know I could. It's not like it's a thing that bothered me to talk to you about it. It's not that. It's just I didn't see the purpose of it. It's not like I know on paper it's good to get emotions off your chest, but I've never felt good doing it. So
ever.
How can I ever? Like it makes me feel bad. Worse.
Really?
Like not worse. It just makes me feel like I'm supposed to feel towards this event. Okay. You know what I mean? Like it's the same thing with my girlfriend because she feels like I haven't talked to her about myself ever because of that, because I don't go into big traumas and stuff, but I just don't have I don't have to bring me to that place again. So why would I? That's how I see it. And it's maybe because I can distance myself easily from stuff and get it out of my brain a little more, like better than most people, but it's just it doesn't do it for me. And if it did, it'd be so temporary that it's not even comparable to ignoring it.
Because what happened is when you were 14, if you remember, you basically burst into tears. You know, you finally.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that you raised your hand for help. I can't say that. You were 14, and I do speak of that in the episodes that is dedicated to young people that you've probably heard in French, though, but that you may have heard before. I can't force you when you're 14 to go see a therapist. So that's a law, yeah. And you probably knew that law. But I very, very strongly suggest it, because even being a coach and a therapist, I knew I was over my head. Like I couldn't, I you're my son. It's way too close. It's just way too close and too slippery. So I wanted you to see somebody, and you fought tooth and nail. You did not want to go. I got 3 sessions from you. And in the car after the third one, maybe we didn't find the perfect match. I'll give you that. It wasn't easy. And, you know, but you looked at me and said, never again. And I remember thinking, you have to have had some moments at least of knowing that this is somebody that is not part of my life, that I can say whatever I want to, that is going to keep everything confidential. And I thought for sure it would help you to talk about it. And you looked at me dead in the eye and said, I'm never going again. And I knew you were serious. Like I knew there was no way I'd get you to go in, but I don't know. I mean, I think if there has to be something in you that really does not like to ask for that help. Am I wrong?
Sure. No, I obviously, like, there's something in me that doesn't want me to ask for help. But that's not even the thing, because I'm not even asking for help when I'm in, like, when I'm already there, you know, because I it's paid for. Like, I'm there, you're doing your job. It's like a normal thing. I'm not even asking for nothing. It's more of like I don't like to get in my emotions, like, at all. Like, it's not something I like to do. So I don't know why. Like, I get it that it's a defense mechanism too, but I still will oblige to it to survive. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because if I gave attention to everything that bothered me all the time, I just never get through nothing ever. So it'd be like more incapacitating than just stacking it. You know what I mean? So it's a moment thing. Like, I know it probably would help on the bigger picture. Like, I know it does, but it doesn't do it for me in the time being. So I need something that works now.
So when you say stacking, that sounds alarms for me. As a mom, for sure. As a coach and therapist, anybody really that knows anything about mental health. So when you say stacking, is that what you're really meaning? So you're stacking your emotions. Yeah. So you're basically swallowing them back down to deal with them later in a way that is, that does feel comfortable for you, or that you're okay with dealing with them, or you're really stating that, no, I'm somebody that swallows it down, and then that's it, and kind of distracts myself and goes to the next thing. Because that worries me deeply.
It's a bit of both. It's a bit of both, because I do a lot of the second thing, I'm not gonna lie. But when I do the first thing, I do it for real, so it heals, like literally. Okay. But when I have, like, I never do the second option if I don't have the choice. Like if I have the choice, I'll cope the proper way. I'll maybe not directly, like, in the moment that I'm living it, but I'll try it at least at night or something. But it's, you know, I have a phone in my hands, you know, like 24/7, so it's like, even if I'm not trying to cope, I'm already been coping for hours, so it's not even like I subconsciously cope now. It's not even conscious. It's a thing that I do without doing it. So it's more of like a, yeah, I'll swallow.
Of course, I'm not teaching you anything, I presume, but everything that you swallow stays. Your body remembers everything, and you're 18, and and I say that, like, you're young and you're pretty healthy, and, you know, but that affects your body, and it if it doesn't show up now, it will later on. I mean, we swallow it down and we wear it. It becomes who we are, and then it kind of feels like, there's an author that is amazing. His name is Michael S. Singer, and in The Tethered Soul, which is one of my top three books, probably. I think I told you about it. That's really cool. Basically, it's kind of thorns. They become like thorns, and after a while, you just can't be touched by any event without pricking one of those thorns, right? So you've probably started feeling that it doesn't swallow anywhere else. It's still, you still deal with it on a daily basis. It's still there.
Sure, but it's not. I don't feel like I am.
Okay.
I don't I'm very anxious. So of course my body is like all tight and stuff. I walk fast. But through my emotions, I don't feel like I'm doing that a lot, I guess. I may be doing it sometimes. Like when I walk fast, it's probably because I'm stressed or something like that. But it's never, like, I've never felt like it was from an emotion directly. It's more of like it's the mix of emotions that I can't handle. Like one emotion is fine, like I'll do it and get it over with. It's the bowl of all of these that it's just too confusing and like weird, I guess. It's like not even reachable. It's like it's a thing that's there, and it's, if I acknowledge it, I don't even, like, I can't acknowledge it. It's not like I have a choice. I can't acknowledge it. I don't know what it is. It's just there. Like some bad emotions that I might feel like on a daily basis, I'll probably deal with it on the moment and act, like, not even act. It's more of like I reassure myself. It's like like, you feel this way because this happened, and this happened for X reason, so we don't care. It's just like, it's the impulse of having an emotion towards something that I don't have control on is ridiculous to me. Yeah. So it's more of like I'm taken by the emotion, and then I'm taken back by my, like, straight way of thinking of, like,
well, you rationalize it. You kind
of I rationalize, like, everything I rationalize it to the tiniest bit, so it's swallowable, I guess. And
if you were me, would you be worried hearing
that? I would have been, but no, I don't feel like you should be worried, or even like what I present to you, I don't think you should be worried either, because it's more like like I'd be worried to an extent, of course, but I'm not saying like it should be on your mind every day, because it's something I've like, I feel like you could say I feel like I have control of myself, and it's probably not real, but it's something I can actually feel like I've been way worse.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say.
I know. Yeah.
And now I'm like controlling my emotions and stuff. So now that I can, like on the moment at least, control my emotions. Like back then in the primary school, I would cry for nothing, like all the time. So it's like if I did that now, I'd be incapacitated in almost every portions of my life because of that. So in a way, I'm thankful for that stacking that I have, because if I didn't learn about it, I would just be way further behind than I am now. Yeah. I guess it's a past that I had to go through, is what I'm saying.
Because the thing is, I don't even
like it, I had to learn it.
Yeah, I don't even remember you being that child. And I mean, we were close. That's the other thing that people don't know. We were close. I don't remember, like, I would have absolutely hand on Bible said, my son is one of the happiest kids on the planet for sure. So to know now, I mean, I've known about this for a few years, of course. It's not like you're completely, like I'm not completely outraged. Like I realized that we've had these conversations, but I don't think that I knew. One of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you was to get to know you also. Very selfish, all selfish. Sure. So I don't, I had no idea. And the thing is, that's me. You know, that's the real kicker. You're talking about who I am. I stack, I swallow it down. Yeah. I've always cried myself. I have cried myself to sleep and hidden that from my mom for sure. That would have been in pieces, right? And having a great mom that I knew that I could absolutely always count on, absolutely ask for help, and didn't. So everything you're saying is like, okay, he's just exactly like me, but I thought I'd see the signs if it was the case. And for me, I remember looking and thinking he is doing great up until perhaps, 12th grade, and you hating school, of course, was kind of very obvious, and maybe realizing, okay, he's a little bit more anxious than I think is normal forever, whatever that means. And it really came down on us that night when you came in, and I realized, okay, you're not okay at all. Like it was a complete, a train went over us. Like I had no idea. And of course your father looked at me like I was counting on you for seeing this, like of course, you know, he didn't see anything. So and at the same time, there's a confidence in how you're speaking of it and how you present yourself. And is that an illusion also, are you a confident person? Would you say that you're a confident person in general?
I say I am, and it's as much of a curse than it is a
really
advantage, I guess, because I'm not confident, I'm egotistical. It's not the same. Like I have an ego for the most dumbest stuff, but I have like a healthy relationship with it too. So it's like, it's hard to pinpoint. Like, for example, I'd say, for example, I'm at work and I'm just walking from point A to point B. Like there's a certain ego in my head that just has, like, it's just there that has to think that, I don't know, it's like I have to be that main character personality type thing. Like I it's not even I have to, I am that when I'm walking from point A to point B. It's a weird confidence, because it's not like a I'm healthy, I'm happy type of confidence. It's a I am the shit type of confidence. So that's why I say it's an ego. And it's not a confidence per se. And even if that ego, I do enjoy, because it's like I'm complimenting myself. I've never felt that, I guess. So it's more like a it's a self-compliment I'm giving myself most of the time. But when it's not there, I'm just triple the time downer, because it's like too high of a confidence to be healthy. So it's mostly like, because it's there, I know there's a part of it that's confidence, and I know there's a part of it that's ego, and I know there's a part of it that's coping for the lack of confidence I have. But the coping is because I think I have less confidence than I actually do, and it's all intertwined and twisted, so it's hard to actually pinpoint if I do or if it's just like bad ego. But I'd say it's confidence, because I'm able to tone it down and like talk what I actually think at the bottom of me, and not just on the, like, I never talk about myself the way my ego talks about myself. It's always it's maximum confident me that's talking. It's never ego.
Yeah, because confidence, like real confidence, is much more solid, right? The ego is just,
sure,
it's superiority. It's fleeting. Exactly. And so how do you believe that we build our confidence then?
For me, it was through ego.
Really?
It was the only way that got me to that bit of confidence. That and the fact that I think I'm funny. That's the...
Yeah, I made sure of that.
Both of the things, yeah. So maybe because I have a lot of social anxiety. Like, it's... Now it's not bad. Like, it's really not bad. But I did for a lot of years. And to be in a social environment without... being the weeping kid that you feel like you are type of thing, like you have to flip it worse. I don't know if that makes sense. You have to flip it to ego, because that's how the people around you present it. That's how you feel the people around you present themselves, because they're just confident. But for you, it feels unrealistic to be confident, so it feels like ego. So what I did was copy the people that were around me, which were confident, like real confidence. And for me, it was ego, because I didn't have that confidence. So the ego just, like, through time and through accepting myself and stuff, just became like real confidence. Because what I was saying, like jokingly and stuff, I just started thinking it like in a healthy way, I guess.
Like, you're an okay person, like really stopping to see, what? I'm funny. I'm an okay person.
Yeah.
And when you say the wimpy kid, so basically, was it your sensitivity? Because you were and you are, and I love that. And I mean, I don't need to tell you how big of an issue it can be for men, kids, but you know, growing men of every age to realize that sensitivity. And of course, I mean, hopefully we're all on board to saying, yeah, there's a range, right? There,
sure.
It's not only okay, but for men to show their emotions, for men to feel emotions, for men to not always be on top of their game and not always be the jock and always be into sports and always, you know, just, and always making a ton of money. Like, that has to be obliterated, please. So, but am I hearing correctly? So basically what you had a hard time dealing with really young was that sensitivity, and you felt like that had to be set aside, which of course played on your confidence and made you maybe listen to that ego a little bit more to kind of show a different side of your personality and kind of man up, and which term that
it was a man thing. It did, but it was mostly a right now as a 5-year-old kid in primary school, I am not ready for adulthood. And I have to be ready for adulthood because it's soon. That's how I always thought from primary school to now.
You were
now.
A kid.
Like,
why
I'm thinking,
you...
I do not care. I was thinking about the purpose of my own life at 5 years old. This was an easy one to answer, you know. So it was just like I don't know. It was just like it's different for everybody, I guess, but for me, it was just like I can't be that emotional and have a 9 to 5, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't be that emotional and have children of my own. I can't be that emotional and have a healthy relationship. I can't be that emotional. And I wasn't wrong. Like, I was too emotional. Like, it was too much. Like, if I were the same way right now, I would not have gotten by as, like, not gotten by, but I'd say, like, I wouldn't have, like, my relationships would have been awful. Like, it would have been more painful than pleasurable. The school would have been awful, like, more than it already is, because I would have been, like, inflicting everybody's pain around me on myself and like even more than I already am, and even on top of hating school at the baseline too. So it just would have been too much to handle with all the other issues that I have.
And you know? What, so that's a societal problem, right? So I presume, what would you have needed to be okay with being sensitive or being emotional, like you said? What was missing that you felt like that wasn't okay and you couldn't allow it and just be a kid and have fun and wonder about your purpose, because that's, you know, how amazing you are. I mean, for me, it sounds just like, yeah, you're special. I told everybody. So what was missing, or what would you have needed to be able to allow that and not start to stack and stuff it all down at such a young age?
Well, of course, less social pressure. Like, I can't be judged by people for, like, negatively about living my emotions as a child. Like, of course, that's traumatic. Probably being able to process them, like, quickly, like the time that it takes to process an emotion is too long. Like, I live fast. Like, if I'm like, I remember one time I was at school and like I think I was in first grade of primary school. I was looking in my locker for some reason, and I opened the door like aggressively and hard for some reason. Like, I don't know why. And there was a girl behind it that I smacked her head with my locker, essentially. And she thought I did it on purpose, or maybe not, but she really thought I'd bump her on purpose. Like, it was hard. Like, she was crying and I felt bad, you know. And she went and told on me, and I got like a detention or whatever. And the guilt mixed with the detention, like the blame and all the I lost points essentially. So all these stressed like stacks, I just obviously couldn't handle it. So I broke down in tears at recess. And as much humiliating as it was, there wasn't people that were like judging me. Like, nobody judged me for crying for the stuff at school. Like, it was the attention that annoyed me. Like, I didn't want the attention. Like, I wanted to be left alone. But there is people all the time. When you show emotions, it interests people or something. Like, it is something like I never understood that. And it, like, I was bringing people to me when I never did, when I was showing emotions. I don't know if that makes sense. So
yeah,
that made me even like made me pissed off on top of everything, and it just wouldn't stop, you know. So processing an emotion took a whole day for me. It was a day thing.
I hope you've enjoyed today's episode, the first part of my English interview with my son Sean. Of course, I am very biased, but I just love him. I love these conversations that I get to have with him now, and I'm really glad that we could share one with all of you. I hope you found this dive into the world of a young 18-year-old interesting, informative, and hopefully just as endearing as I did. Please come back next week for the last part of our talk, during which Sean continues to share with us how he's doing, what it can be like for someone who's just entering adulthood in 2022, his hopes, dreams, and fears, hopefully helping us to better understand the experience and learn how to support them along their journey as best we can. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being here. I truly hope you found some value in today's episode. If you did, please come and join us at The Pact 2022 on Facebook and Instagram. And until next time, I am wishing you all an amazing week.